All right, welcome everyone to our discussion of Prashadna. So, and the question is, what are the connections of all the different sections in Prashadna So one to another? Let me share the screen with you, and here we go. So the order of Prashadna So is very difficult. The general context is we had a Levite census, which was part of an Israel census, which concludes the Israel census and set up that you have the three tribes on one side, three on another, in the center, you have the Mishkan, the tabernacle. These are the amount of Jews there are. These are the amount of Levites. Particularly the beginning of the Parsha is about the Levites, as it was the end of last week's Parsha. And then we have the following. First, we have to send out all the Sarua, anyone who has leprosy, and Zav, and with gonorrhea, different types of physical emissions, and Chol Tamei Lo Nefesh, anyone who touched the dead. Whether they're male, they're female, send them away from the camp. So we're talking about the camp, sending away from the camp. Don't defile the camp that I am present in. I'm dwelling in the camp. So you say, well, what's that doing here? Well, you have camp, so you have to know who's allowed in the camp, who's in, who's out. If you're impure, you don't belong. Okay. Next topic. Daber b'nei Yisrael, isho ishak yasu mikol chator adam limo mal b'shem b'shma nevshahi. Vadu at chadam asher asu v'shiv v'shma b'rosho. Kamishito yusev alam, tan l'asher asham lo. Somebody does some sort of something they're guilty of, some trespassing, breaking of faith, they have to confess. This is the source of confession in the Torah. They have to return whatever it is to the person and also add 1/5 to it as well. And if there's no one to return it to, probably because the rabbis say he's a convert, he has no relatives, he died, then you give it to the Kohen. Interesting. Then certain things go to the Kohen. What's that doing here? We're talking about someone stealing something. We're talking about setting up the camp. Why are we talking about someone who stole something and needs to return it? And if there's a convert, what's going on? Third section that needs explication, I'll call it section C, is Sota. If a man's wife goes astray, and she commits an offense against him. Now, of course, if he commits adultery, then you know there are serious consequences to that, but it's not adultery. It's maybe it was someone slept with her, yeah, and he wasn't aware of it. And really she did commit some crime. Or there was a spirit of jealousy, of fight that got into him, and she did not do anything wrong. Maybe she hid away with someone she was associating with someone too much, but she never did anything wrong per se. And there's a whole ceremony to determine what did she do anything wrong or didn't she? What's that doing here? We're talking about setting up a camp, and then we're talking about a woman who's going astray from her husband. What's going on? Then another section. So, maybe we're talking about different types of criminals. Get them out of the camp. But then, talk about the Nazirite. The Nazirite, if a man vows to be a Nazir, a Nazir, a Nazirite, then what does he do? Well, according to Torah's definition, he has to refrain from any wine or strong drink and any sort of vinegar drinks, anything even that's soaked in grapes, very far away from grapes, even wet grapes, dried grapes, raisins, even the seeds of a grape, which again, some people get hooked on, or even the skin of the grapes. So anything. And also, he has to grow his hair. What's that got to do with it? And then he shouldn't come in contact with the dead, as if he was some kind of a high priest. So what's that doing here? We're talking about. So I started getting a theory. Okay, we're talking about the people who don't belong in the camp. But then we have a Nazirite who's wonderful. He wants to stay away from a drink. He wants to be like a high priest. He doesn't want to come in contact with the dead. What's he doing here? Then we have another section of blessing the priestly blessings. Okay, it's always nice to get a blessing from the priest, but what's it doing here? Why in this particular place? God should lift his countenance, should bless you and guard you. What is it doing here? And then the part, so those are the five sections, A, B, C, D, and E, that I want to address. And then the parsha then concludes with a longer section, which took place as a historical event. The Jews were dedicating the tabernacle, and each tribe, tribal leader in the Nasi, brought a gift for that tribe.
Hello, Gary.
Okay. But what the question is, what does that got to do? What does that got to do with anything? Why were these stories told in the context of the fact that the beginning of the establishment of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, these priests, these princes, these Nesiim brought their gifts, gold and silver and chariots, etc. They brought it to the Mishkan, to the tabernacle. Well, what does that got to do with all these different sections that we mentioned? So to summarize, and we'll welcome David here as well. To summarize, this is what we have. We had a census and a setup of the camp. And we said, send out the impure from the camp. People who have stolen goods, you return them and confess. If they stole it from a convert, they should give it to a Kohen, if the convert is dead and has no relatives. The Sota ceremony for the woman who strays. The Nazirite for the one who wants to be holy. And the Birchai Kohenim are given, and then we have a dedication of the Mishkan. What is going on? How do these seven things in this parsha have anything to do with each other? What is going on? So first we want to look at the classical commentaries, then we'll look at some modern commentaries, then we'll hear from you, and we'll have share some final thoughts. So Rashi, and many of the commentaries, were deeply aware and disturbed by these quixotic changes within the text. So he says, well, why are these sections here? Because says the Midrash, says the Gemara in Gittin, well, after all, these sections were said on the day of the Mishkan, the day when the tabernacle was erected. That's when God told us these things. But it sort of begs the question, why would you want to talk particularly about these things on the day the tabernacle was erected? For instance, about a sota. And why now? A Nazirite. Why now? But at least he says that that's when it was. This is when God gave us these commandments. Rabbi Yosef B'chor Shor says that since the Shekhinah is among them, and you're gathered around the Shekhinah, around the Mishkan, around the tabernacle, around God, like angels, so you have to purify the camp from those who were impure. But there's different places. The Metzora is sent out of all the camps. The Nazir, the Zav, sort of gonorrhea problem, he sent out of just the central camp. And those who were come in contact with it, there are different camps, and the different people are sent out of the different camps. Okay, interesting. Okay, so we understand that's pretty easy to get. That we have a camp, and then there are people who don't belong in the camp because of impurity. This is a pure camp where God is. We send out the impure. Okay, we hope to welcome them back when they are cured from their different diseases, etc. Spiritual diseases. The Ramban addresses this and also stolen goods. He says, after they established the Mishkan, he commanded them to send out the impure, that the camp should be holy, and it should be worthy that God should rest there. And this is forever. You always want to keep the impure out of the camp. Even today, we want to keep people off the Temple Mount. Now, since we were counted according to our families, and we took out certain people who didn't belong in the family, people who were not, they were Egyptian, they were quasi-converts, they didn't really belong, they didn't really convert fully. They were still going back to worshiping idols. We set them aside. So we also said, but still, you shouldn't steal from the ger, you shouldn't steal from someone who has no relatives. So based on the rabbinic interpretation, that the person who has no one to return the stolen object to must be a convert. Because who else doesn't have any relatives? He's saying, well, that's very important. You have a camp, and in that camp, you have one of the people in the camp is one of the people in the camp that you have to be careful about is the convert. Don't afflict the convert. Judah asks the question, but can't we? We're not allowed to steal from anyone anyway. Why do we have to mention that if you stole something, you have to give it back? We already know that. You return stolen objects. It's true, the idea of tshuva, repentance, confession, is mentioned here, mentioned nowhere else really, other than in sacrificial context. Then it might be something new here. The idea of tshuva, you can confess and you can improve yourself if you get thrown out of the camp. Yes, that's right. Why would it mention something that's so obvious, something like stealing? It's already in the Ten Commandments. What do we need it for here? That just strengthens the question even more. Shaddal was a more modern commentary, 19th century. He says, well, now that we have the camps, we have to know who has to be sent out because the camp is holy. And when they go out to the war, they have to have extra holiness. In other words, we're not just a camp that's sitting around the desert for 40 years. We're supposed to be going to Israel to conquer. So if you're conquering, the conquest requires a very holy level. That's why when you're in a military camp, it's the Jewish official holy military camp of the olden days, according to the way the Torah envisioned it, someone even had a minor impurity, they have to go outside the camp. So Shaddal is reminding us that we're not just in the context of a holy camp, we're also trying to conquer. And we know from Parsha Ki Tetzé, later in Devarim, that when you're conquering Israel, the army has to be holy. Okay. Then we have the Tzora Mor, a Spanish and Portuguese commentator, later North African, who said as follows. What's this business of this, that there's a camp, and then there are people who should be sent out of the camp, and then there are people who sin, who steal things. He says, well, after he told us about people who are impure in their bodies, then he says some people are impure because of their sins. They might do other things that are impure as well. So he's connecting. We have a camp. It's holy. We have people who are impure. They belong outside the camp until they're healed. Then we have people who are impure, not physically or spiritually. They're impure socially. They're impure in terms of their behavior and their sins. So that's also something worthy of discussing as you're trying to set up a holy camp. Rav Shem Shofal Hirsch sets up a theory which we may come back to as one of the key theories in explaining the whole thing. He says, look, there are three types of impurities here. There are three camps, you know, there's the general Israelite camp, the Levite camp, where Moses is, and then there's where the Shekhinah is, where the actual tabernacle. So he says, look, you send out the leper because the leper speaks Lashon Hara, right? He slanders, he's haughty. So we send him out, and that's a social problem. He's out because of social reasons. He's too haughty. He doesn't fit in. Then we have people who are the Zavi, people of gonorrhea. It's an ancient form of gonorrhea. They are connected with the matter of marriage. And that's why we then mention the Sota, who's also has gone astray in her marriage. So the different realms of spirit, society, and of marriage, which are addressed by this camp. In order to have a holy camp, you have to address issues of spirituality and also of society as well. So he sees within these different types of people we send out, he sees already there the different typologies, which we're going to use later. The leper, I should mention, the rabbis say he's leprous because he doesn't get along well with others. He's always slandering, but also he's haughty. That may relate to the Nazir, who thinks he's so special, better than everybody else. And then the one with gonorrhea, again, this is like a spiritual gonorrhea, that he has some sort of spiritual emissions, or he or she, may relate to the Sota, the wayward woman, who also has some sort of a family problem. The Kli Yakar Rebbe Ephraim Lunshitz from Poland, he said, well, lived a few hundred years ago, he said, well, you know, there are certain sins that make God go away. We know that right now we lost the divine presence. We're not in Israel. We don't have the temple in Jerusalem, the Beit HaMikdash, because of certain sins. And the three big ones are, you know, immorality and killing, and also what else? Idolatry. So he says, well, that's why we send all these people. Because he says the leper, maybe there's an element of heresy in the leper. And he brings some textual proof to that. And then, of course, you have the Zav, the gonorrhea, and also the wayward woman. Maybe that's something to do with immorality. And then about killing, maybe that's something to do with the person who steals. So maybe these three elements, the three cardinal sins, that's what it's saying. You know, in the end of days and thousands of years later, the temple will be destroyed because of the three cardinal sins. Here it is at the beginning. We're setting up the tabernacle, and right away we tell you, This is what you have to have a holy community. You can't have licentiousness. You can't have immorality of various sorts, stealing, killing. And you have to have proper family life. And you can't steal. You can't have idolatry and haughtiness either. Rabbi Yosef Bechor Shor was a French commentator after Rashi. And he says, well, since they were so holy, they have to cleanse themselves from different things. And he says, that's why it says regarding stealing from the convert, it says, limol mal, he trespassed against God. And the sota, it also says, the wayward woman, it says, she transgressed against God. And then what's the sota, then what's the Nazirite doing here? So the rabbis say, here he quotes something that Rashi's going to say later, that when someone sees how the sota woman got herself into trouble in the family, then he says to himself, you know what? I'm never drinking, because that's how that woman got into that trouble. Relating to the stolen goods, you could say that the word ma'al, the word ma'al is repeated. He says also the leper is also some sort of sin. So if you commit various crimes, some of which you land up being a leper, some of which you land up being a zav, I'm not as familiar with that, with the gonorrhea. And then for others, you steal. So for various crimes, you don't belong in the camp. You need to get out. Ramban makes a whole bunch of other connections as well. He says as follows. The sota. Why didn't you mention the sota when he talked about other sacrifices of meal offerings? You should have talked about it then in Vayikra. What's it doing over here? The woman has to bring a certain meal offering. So talk about it there. So he says, because we said that the nation of Israel was counted, okay, according to their families. So he says, if you want to keep the family purity, you want to know who's the mother and who's the father, you can't have women like this who are running around with other people. So that's why it talks about this, particularly in connection with the camp. And what about the Nazirite? Because after you have a camp and you have the impure over here, then you have people who want to be extra holy. They want to serve God. They also have a special place. So the Nazirite is not someone you kick out of the camp. It's someone who wants to have a special place within the camp. Okay. So different. These are shards of theories that sort of connect everything together. The Tur, the Rush's son, Rabbi Yaakov Turin, he has one of the commentaries, and he says that first we send out the impure, and that reminds us, he says, mystically, it reminds us of the sin of Adam. So he ate from the garden, and the snake said bad things about people, and the woman said bad things about people, and they were punished. He claims that the snake got leprosy. The woman had problems with childbirth and bodily emissions. And the man was punished with death. And therefore, we have to avoid leprosy, this gonorrheal problem, and contact with the dead. So it's an interesting, cute interpretation. Okay. Now, Rashi also makes another connection between the robber and the woman who's wayward woman. He says, you know what? If you don't give the gifts to the Kohen that you should give, like if something was stolen, you don't know who to give it to the Kohen. If you don't give the holy things to the Kohen, you know what's going to happen? God will bring you into the temple and you have to give something to the Kohen anyway. You know what you have to give? You'll have to have the sacrifice of the wayward woman. Okay, it's an interesting, you know, sort of midrashic connection. Rav Shimshon Val Hirsch, we mentioned before, but over here he mentions, he connects again the gonorrheal, the people you send out of the camp for gonorrheal issues, and also the wayward woman, family matters. Family matters are very important in sort of setting up a camp. I mentioned the Rashi before, based on the Gemara, that the connection between Sota and Nazir, when a person sees a woman goes astray, he vows not to drink any wine. And the Sif Sechamim brings out this question. He says, what is it doing here? What's the section of the woman doing here? It's from the Ten Commandments. You can't have adultery. What's it doing here? So that's why Rashi addresses that question. The Ibn Ezra is very interested in general in the question of the structure of the Torah. So he says, well, the Nazirite is next to the Sota because if the woman is not a wayward woman, she was accused falsely by her husband, you know what happens? She immediately conceives and has a child, and he'll be holy, he'll be a Nazirite. So it's interesting. If you look in the story of Samson in the Haftorah, you'll see that her husband accuses her of a bit of adultery, and she immediately has a son who's a Nazirite. So it's an interesting take on the Samson story as well. The Torah, back to the Torah more, he says that wine can often lead to immorality, and he elaborates on that. Good. Now, there's another thing we should ask. What did Nazirite and Sota have in common? So let's see. The Nazirite vows that he doesn't want to, he wants to be a Nazirite. So from now on, he's not allowed to eat grapes. If he eats grapes, he's a big sin. And the Sota, the man says, I don't want you to hang out with that man. If you hang out with that man, you're in big trouble. She hangs out with the man. Now she is forbidden to him. He cannot sleep with her until they have a ceremony of the Sota. So both the Nazirite and the man created a prohibition. They didn't have to. They could have said, look, you know, please don't hang out with that guy. But instead she says, I'm warning you in front of these witnesses, never shall you be seen with that man again. Well, that's great. Now that she's seen with the man, now we don't know if she has sinned and created this whole problem. Both the Nazirite and the Sota, the man, the husband of the Sota, create their own problems. And an actual prohibition in the Torah is created by their words. And that's why the tractates of Nazir and Sota are also found near each other. Then we have the Birkat Kohanim. Again, we're trying to figure, those who came late, we're trying to figure out what are all these different sections. There's seven different topics in this parsha. What do they have to do with each other? Then we have Birkat Kohanim. What does Birkat Kohanim have got to do with anything? We've been talking about the Nazirite and the Sota, the wayward woman. So the Ibn Ezra, in his abridged version, he says, well, look, if you look in Vayikra, they had a dedication of the tabernacle, and then Aaron gave them priestly blessings. So too over here. So it connects. Or he says, in the regular Ibn Ezra commentary, he says, well, you had the Nazirite, and the Nazirite is holy, and then it mentions the Kohanim, who are also holy. That's what he says. It's not so convincing. Again, for the Ibn Ezra, association is good enough. Ibn Ezra believes that the Torah is sometimes written not with some overarching structural theme, but rather with association. Chamalevich writes about this as well. He quotes the Machishim, usually the Karaites. The Karaites, the heretics of his day, around 1,000 years ago in Spain, they said that anybody who brought a mincha offering was given a blessing. So this is the Kohen giving a blessing to the woman. You know, she was accused perhaps falsely by her husband, so he gives her a blessing. That's what he quotes that, although he doesn't agree with it. It's interesting, he quotes it. The Ramban says as follows. He says that just as when they dedicated the tabernacle, so too, for all generations, when you have different services that you do, the Kohen should give a blessing. And specifically in the Beit HaMikdash, we talked the other day, what is the Birkat Kohanim? Is it something that's a mitzvah forever? Or was it only a mitzvah really in the Beit HaMikdash? So everyone says it's a mitzvah today, but the question is, what's the real makor? Was there real Birkat Kohanim in the Beit HaMikdash? So the Ramban says, yeah, maybe. That's why it's next to the tabernacle here, because the real Birkat Kohanim has something to do with something you did in the Beit HaMikdash. Back to the Kli Yakar, also Rabbi Lunshitz also talks a little bit about this. And he says that, the Nazirite, he wanted to be holy for himself. But the wine is supposed to be this holy thing that you say a blessing, you know, the Kiddush, and you get married over wine, and you have, a lot of holy things happen with wine. But wine also can ruin the world. Some say that that's the first sin, the first fruit. That was the original sin. So he says that the Kohen should not have any wine. And he should say these blessings and try to bring blessing where perhaps there had become curse to the world through the improper drinking, he should bring blessings. So again, trying to connect these sections. And finally, the Tzur HaMor, on this question of what's the Birchat Kohanim doing here, he says when you go out to war, you know, you need a blessing. When you go out to war, you need guardianship, you need help from the Kohanim, and you need a special blessing, and that God should inspire them and bless them. And you know, sometimes even if you don't deserve it, you get a blessing. So that's why he thought there should be a blessing now, because he wants to remind us we're going out to war. When you go out to war, you need a blessing. Okay, so these are all the classic commentaries. So far we've had, you know, people trying to connect this or that section with each other. We haven't really seen an overarching theme. The most overarching was the Samson and Raphael Hirsch, which I think we'll come back to, which is that there are different problems in society. There are sexual problems. There are interpersonal economic problems, social economic problems. There are and then we have to see how the Nazirite fits into that. Where does he fit in exactly? We'll take a look at that. So I'm looking at commentators primarily from my yeshiva, Shivat Har Tzion, or their associated Tanakh school, education school is associated with it. It's called Machon Herzog. And let's see what they say. So Rabbi Amnon Bazak, he was a friend of the Benin family, those who know the Benins. So he said, the Torah wanted to say that even though the Levites were chosen, because the beginning of the parsha is all about Levites, last week's, the end of the parsha was all about Levites, but there's a place for regular Jews to be holy too, because a Nazirite could become holy as well. A regular Jew could become a Nazirite, and he can become like a Kohen. So that's the important thing. But wait a second, the Nazirite, you honor the Kohen because he brings the sacrifices. But what are you honoring the Nazirite for? He's not doing anything. So he says, yeah, that's right. They are different. They are different. But you know what he's like? He's like the high priest. The Nazirite's not trying to become a Kohen. He's not going to bring offerings. You know what he's like? He's like the high priest who has a crown on his head. The linguistic connections are there as well. The high priest is known as Nazir Shem Mishchad. He has a Nazir. He has the crown on his head. The Rabbi Bazak also mentions the hairy connection. There's a connection of hair. Think about it. Who's got hair in this parsha? Who's got something going on with hair in the parsha? Anybody?
The Nazirite.
The Nazirite is supposed to have long hair. Good. What else? Well, there's also the wayward woman. The woman who's accused, she has to uncover her hair or make it go wild. There are different interpretations, whether she had it in a bun and they had to undo it, or that she had a covering and you remove it, or both. So there's something going on with hair. And now the high priest doesn't have a hair thing going on, but he does have a prohibition that he has to have a haircut all the time. They say a high priest had a haircut every day. A regular priest maybe once a week, or other people, you know, every 30 days. So there's something about, you know, not letting their hair go wild when they, for instance, if they have a close relative who passes away, the high priest cannot let his hair go wild. So there's some sort of symbol there as well. So there's sort of a linguistic connection. So what's going on? So he says, well, with the Kohanim, they have a natural standing, and they can't let their hair go wild. Their holiness is achieved through their deed. And if they want to, they can reach a very high level. But the Nazirite, he can only reach it through some external thing, and that would be through his hair. Hair in many societies, look at the Sikhs, other societies, has great significance. And this is what you see here as well, that the status of the Kohanim and the Nazir, although diametrically opposed, one is growing his hair, one's cutting his hair, but it relates to his hair. And the Nazirite needs that hair status to look like something special. You notice Ben-Gurion and Einstein, they thought, you know, the wild hair, Buber, they all thought of their wild hair, that somehow would make them seem very special. Okay. Right, Yonatan Grossman, although lesser known. He's a big Tanakh scholar. And he says, there's a national sign. He says, let's look at the books. You have to understand all the books in Tanakh. This is a very broad view. The book of Shemot is about trying to put the divine presence in us. Vayikra also, but through the avoda, through the worship in the Beit HaMikdash. Bamidbar is about setting up a holy society. We count all the Jews. We set them up around the tabernacle. Ah, so it's a communal thing. So we have a national perspective. So here, the dedication is not done by Aaron, as it was in Vayikra. Dedication is done by 12 tribal leaders. It's a totally different dedication ceremony. The dedication ceremony at the end of the parsha is by all the leaders, because it's a national element. And there, so what does it have to do with the other sections? He says, well, firstly, in light of this, the Birkat Kohanim is a national blessing for all the Jews, where the Kohanim are not there for themselves to be holy. They're there to bless the Jews. And, of course, the Nazirite and the Sotah woman need the Kohen to help them also. And he says, like Rabbi Samson of Al-Hirsch, and I think this is going to be our key interpretation, that it relates to different circles of society. The law of sending out the impure relates to the idea of making sure that it is spiritually on the right level. That's the spiritual. The idea that you have to get rid of that robber, that relates to society, to the social level. And it's not just spiritual that will make a holy camp. We need practical things as well. And then the woman, there we have to realize that that there's also a family element that's very important, and to be loyal to our family. And also, we have to check if the husband's not being loyal to his wife, if the husband is being overly suspicious to his wife. It's interesting, you know, is the Nazirite trying to put the woman in check or the man in check? And it's probably an element of both. So that's another element. And the final element is that the Nazirite represents the individual. Within this big societal thing, if one person wants to be holy, there's room for that. It's not just a national thing. One person can have their own holy spiritual movement, and that's what we're doing now during quarantine. We focus more on the individual holiness involved. Now, Rabbi Yoel ben Nun is one of the great Tanakh scholars. I didn't find his piece so amazing on this particular point, but many of the things we're learning originated with Rabbi Yoel ben Nun. He was the teacher of many of the Tanakh teachers. So he says, firstly, let's notice the very picayune point that the Nazirite sacrifice and the sacrifice they brought to dedicate the tabernacle were indeed very similar. And then he says, what's the Sota doing here? He says, you know what we're trying to do? He takes a very liberal sort of view. This Sota ceremony is not a ceremony to embarrass women, God forbid, to embarrass wayward women. This Sota ceremony is made to preserve the life of women. We know that in the Middle East, in any country, the man has a lot of power. Like today we're talking about power dynamics, blacks, whites. There's also a male-female power dynamic. And the husband could be very much lord over the wife to the extent that he could have her life in his hands, and as often happens. So we say, if the man is jealous, you got to come to the Beit HaMikdash. We're not going to allow some sort of killing. Killing is not allowed. So actually, similar to some of the other commentaries we saw, the Kli Yakar, one of the things you can't do and have a holy camp is have any murder. You can't have, honor killings where, I saw you having falafel with that man. All of a sudden, the woman disappears. We don't allow that. This is not allowed. It's part of this. So it is an interesting perspective of Rabbi Yoel ben Nun. Right, Ezra Bick was one of my son's teachers. He says, a student of Rabbi Salvagic, he says, it's like the counting. When we counted, what did we do? We counted according to their families, remember? According to their tribe and according to mishpachotam. We mentioned the word mishpacha many times. So the mishpacha element, whether it's the woman with the gonorrhea, the man with the gonorrhea, or whether it is the wayward woman, the family part is important. And he believes that there's an anti-hedonism. If you're going to have a holy camp, you can't be hedonistic. And that's why the Nazirite comes in. And that's why we have to avoid these wayward women types for the same reason. You have the holy sanctuary, the tabernacle. There's also the people. And it's telling us, you can't steal from poor people. What else? He says, there's an ideal we're trying to set up. But then there's a reality. Some people are stealing. Some people are being licentious. We have to do something about this. So therefore, it comes to bridge the gap between the ideal of a holy camp, supposedly, and the fact that, in fact, among the Jews, we have stealing, we have killing, we have robbing, we have all these things. It's trying to bridge the gap between these two things. To bring peace between husband and wife, make sure they shouldn't be fighting. So the Judaism is very much aware of human frailties, and it realizes that some of these strong feelings could ruin a community. So if we then turn around and we ask ourselves, whoa, that's a lot of different commentaries. What's going on here? So let's step back for a moment. We're trying to set up a holy camp. That camp is organized according to family. So family is very important. It's also supposed to be holy. So if it's supposed to be holy, you have to kick out of the camp those who are impure. One of the types of the leper. Leper is both antisocial. He stirs a controversy. And also, the leper is also haughty. And so is the Nazirite. We have to watch out for him too. We gotta let him be a Nazirite a little bit, but then we have to tell him, okay, that's up. It's enough. You went through that stage. Now you're not a leper. Now you're not a Nazirite anymore. And the Nazirite needs to be checked as well. That's my own theory. And then you have the sota, the wayward woman, because family life, the mishpacha has to be preserved. And then why is Brichat Kohanim? Because the Kohanim are not just there to do their holy sanctimonies and in their sanctuary, but they're there to bless the people. They're there to help the wayward woman, to help the husband, to help. And then there's been the suggestion that this touches the realms of the interpersonal, the family, the spiritual, and that all the different realms have to be holy in order to have a truly holy camp. So on the one hand, this parsha is sort of bothersome. I've been working on this problem for 30, 40 years. I've been trying to figure out what this parsha is all about. And yet I think we saw in classical commentaries, some more modern commentaries, how there is a way to sort of see how this is all designed to talk about the chevra, the relationship of society as a whole to the tabernacle. In the previous book, in the book of Vayikra, we were mostly interested in the people in the Beit HaMikdash. And then we talked about the people outside the Beit HaMikdash. And we talked about some immoral people, sort of a bifurcated thing. Here, it's all about setting up a society where people are involved. You have Nesim, you have leaders, and that holy camp has to work for everybody. So what do you think? What do you think is some of the connections here? Does it seem convincing or what? What do you think? I open the floor to everybody at this point.
It seems like a system of checks and balances to keep anybody from having too much control over the rest of the community.
Where do you see a check? Who's there a check on?
Especially the part with the husband and wife.
A check on the husbands. Good.
A little bit of, it could be misunderstanding on my part, but it seemed a little bit of a check on some of the priests with the Nazirite.
I think a check on people who think they're too holy, whether they're
exactly
or whether they are Nazirites. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kind of keep people focused on what I've heard folks say before with converts is, don't try to do more than you need to. Focus on what you need to do.
Yes, there are those who say that the Nazirite is a sinner because he's trying to do more than the Torah demands. That's good. Yeah. That's good. Anybody else? What strikes you about this dilemma or the solutions that we proposed, or about all these different sections? Let me lay them out there for you again, so you can see them more directly again. Let's go back to the beginning here. There it is, right there. The census, the sending out of the pure, the returning stolen goods, particularly from the convert, sota ceremony, the nazir, the Birkat Kohanim, the priestly blessings, and the dedication of the Mishkan. Any other comments?
It seems to me that God knew the fabric of society and made way for repentance and change.
Oh, good. Right. We didn't emphasize enough. Good. Thank you, Elaine. the according to many rabbis, the Rambam included, the main according to Rambam particularly, the main profession of tshuva is right here. V'hitvadu. If you did a mal, you did a societal crime. Admit it. So that actually, this is about how do you repair society? You have tshuva. You have the possibility of repentance. That's what allows for a good society, right? Our society, now we're probably doing very poorly on that. All these different protests we're having now probably reflect that as well. We're very good at punishing people. We're not very good at helping people repent. We're probably doing a lot more rehab and a lot less, just penalizing, for penalizing sake. We're creating a whole punitive society where we have millions of people locked up. Here the idea is just give, it's very interesting the Torah's view of grand larceny or major theft, give it back, pay some extra, confess your sin, apologize to the person you stole. It's very different from the American idea. Well, it's a lot of money, we better slap your wrist really badly, we put you away in jail for 20 years. No, you can't vote anymore. It needs modification for exactly how it would work today, but certainly there's the element of tshuva. Yes, how do you have a good society? You allow for tshuva. That's good. I like this. All right, well, thanks for joining us, and we'll be in touch.